ओमज्ञानचिनिरं हस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाक चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
The main point in this verse is that no one can invent time. That can only be given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He, Narayana, is transcendental.
He is transcendental, and dharma, param dharma, means to serve him in the transcendental position.
Sadai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhakti adhokshaje ahaitukiya pratihata yayatma supasvijati. This verse mentions service to the Supreme Lord who is adhokshaja, who is beyond the range of the material senses to understand. Atav Shri Krishna namadi nabhaved grahim indriyai sevan loke hi jivado swayameva spuratyadaha. The mundane senses cannot understand the main form qualities or pastimes of Krishna. But if one performs transcendental service to him, then he will be pleased to reveal himself to such a devotee. So actually all the Vedic literatures are meant for understanding Krishna. As Prabhupada quotes here, Vedeshu Sarvairahameva Vedyaha. But then again we find Vedeshu Durlabham is difficult to find out Krishna in the Vedas. Because most of the Vedas, which are extant in human society, they are catering for human society, which means materially contaminated. And actually, all the Vedas only lead to Krishna. All the Vedas only describe Krishna. Vede Ramayane Chaiva Purane Bharate Tata Adav Antecha Madhecha Hari Sarvatra Diyate. In all the Vedas, beginning, middle, and end, the only topic is glorification of Hari. However, to persons in material consciousness, it doesn't seem like that. Worship Indra, worship Agni, worship Varuna. So these are actually the statements of the Vedas are like that. But one has to understand actually who Indra is. That's another name for Vishnu. But it's deliberately presented in a manner that will appeal to fools. The Vedas are for fools. But it's for foolish people who are slightly elevated above the animal platform, so that they are willing to follow the principles of dharma. Without dharma, a human being is an animal. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanya metat pashubhyanaranam dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhyanaranam. Animals and humans both eat, sleep, mate and defend. The special prerogative of human life is the possibility to follow dharma. So human life without dharma is animal life in human form. So these rules and regulations of the Vedic literatures, they're meant to gradually lead people to the real dharma, the transcendental position of serving Krishna. That is why what is called dharma, it cannot be defined simply as moral principles. Sometimes people want to equate dharma with morality. This should be done, that should be done, good activities should be done. But it is more than mere morality. Humanists, they advocate morality. A humanist is a certain genre of, you don't know that word, genre, type you can say. It's a certain type of atheist who they believe in the glory and the dignity of the human race. And they consider religion a disservice to human society. But they think that it is the moral duty of every human being to act in a manner that is conducive to the uplift of the whole human society. So we should be good, we should behave properly. That is our duty as human beings, they profess. We should be moral. Of course, if they say duty, then the question comes, well, what is the basis of this duty? If it is a self-evident principle, then how has that come into being? So as usual, various kinds of atheistic ideas, they lack any depth. For shallow, insincere people. So, I'm just quoting this to show that morality is not necessarily linked with religion. So dharma stands above mere morality. And morality in itself does not constitute dharma. Sometimes, certain types of atheists, actually they're atheists, but they say religion is good because it makes people moral. Actually, there's no God, but it's good if people believe in God because that will make them moral. And then there's another kind of religionist who think that they believe in God, but they think that religion is to be judged simply by moral principles. They say, our Jesus was good, your Krishna was not good. Or they say, our Ram is good, your Krishna is not good. So actually, Krishna is the embodiment of all moral principles. But what is morality has to be understood from God's perspective, not from our perspective. They'll say, well, Krishna was killing so many people. Although actually the Bible's full of all kinds of killing also. God, because he favored the Jews, had every firstborn child in Egypt. He killed them all, and even the cows and everything, according to the Bible. So it may appear that Krishna is not very good. He's always killing so many people. There are so many names for Krishna connected with his killing demons. Murari, Muravit, Agavit, Chanurari, Kangsari. These are new ones. You don't have to translate these. So he's glorified as the, there's one generic name, Daityari. He's the enemy of the sons of Diti, descendants of Diti. That's a generic term, but he's not necessarily against them. Prahlad is also a Daitya. Prahladas chasya Daityanam. Krishna says, I am among the Daityas, I am represented by Prahlad. Prahladas chasmi Daityanam. So it appears to be not very good, but it's good, because whatever Krishna does is good. Baki demons, they got killed by Krishna. Anyway, everyone in this material world is killed by Krishna. If you die by cancer or heart attack or just old age or whatever the cause may be, ultimately it's done by Krishna anyway. But Krishna, the ultimate cause is not Krishna, it's our own rascaldom actually. The ultimate cause of everything is Krishna. But in the case of our suffering in this material world, Krishna is like the instrumental. There in Sankhya philosophy, they analyze their different kinds of causes. Just like you can say, what is the cause of this pot? What is the cause of this clay pot? Well, you could say the clay. It's made from clay. But what about the potter? The clay just doesn't make itself into a pot. So there are different causes. There are different kinds of causes. That the pot is produced from the clay is true, and without the clay there can't be a pot. So that is the ingredient cause, but there's also the instrumental cause, which is the potter. And then the cause could also be said to be the potter's family, because he makes it because he has to maintain his family. But then again, it could be said to be other people's families because they need the pot to carry water. So anyway, the cause of our suffering in this material world is our own rascaldom. It could be analyzed in various ways. And certainly Krishna's involvement is there also, because not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. However, Krishna is not forcing us to suffer in this material world. So it is our own lack of dharma that we have chosen to come to this material world. So the process of dharma is to revive our original consciousness. The ordinary worldly dharma is meant to raise us to the platform of actual dharma, which is transcendental. So following the principles of dharma is required for human beings, without which they are animals. But it is more than simply morality. Ordinary morality will keep us in this material world. You can become a very moral dog or cat. Actually, dogs and cats don't have morality. But morality without Krishna consciousness, that simply causes us to be born again and again. Nor can anyone properly ascertain what is morality without understanding from Shastra. Because dharma includes morality, but it takes us further. Just like in the Western countries, especially in America, there's an ongoing controversy about the propriety or otherwise of abortion. It's very sad that in India there's no controversy. There are simply thousands and maybe lakhs of abortion clinics, which is another nonsense. That girls are not supposed to be allowed to be married till they're 18 in this stupid country. So marriage before 18 is wrong, but abortion before 18, that's normal. You can't get married if you have children, normally speaking, because that means you're no longer a kanya. They're not kanyas, but they're simply murdering mothers. Very ridiculous situation. And another rascal, this so-called Mahatma Gandhi, who was preaching ahimsa, but he allowed the Muslims, they should have cow slaughter. They asked him that now we're independent, we should have no cow slaughter. That was only allowed for the last 1,000 years or so because we were dominated by mlechas. But the king of Ahimsa said, No, you have to allow the Muslims to follow their own dharma. Probably India is the number one animal killer, at least they're the number one beef exporters. What a shame for India. It would have been better to stay under the British, actually. Because the British, in many ways, they wanted to maintain the Hindu customs. They didn't want to interfere with it. But the Hindus have spoiled it worse than the British could have dared. The British wouldn't have dared to do such a thing. This whole that so-called Indian mutiny was because that word came out that they were using beef fat on the bullets, which you had to pull with your teeth. And the Muslims, they used to kill a cow in the Hindu area, and this way they'd cause a riot. But nowadays, the Hindus themselves are eating beef. No. So, who could imagine such a horrible situation? Because they're eating meat, they eat meat becomes strong. So they're eating mutton, but you see that the beef is cheaper, so it all looks the same, tastes the same, so why not buy it? Save money. So anyway, I was going to talk about abortion. I got a little bit sidetracked here. So abortion, in America, they're discussing, is it right or is it wrong? Some people are very much against it. But there is a certain lobby who say that, no, women should have the right to choose. We understand from Shastra that this is a grossly sinful activity. But they have no standard, fixed standard of morality. So they think, well, that's a very good point. A woman should be allowed to choose what to do with her body. Why should we deny them the right? So what do you say to that? They say this because they are not in knowledge of higher laws. That there are certain laws of the universe called the laws of karma. What is right and what is wrong, you cannot imagine it yourself. That is given by Bhagawan in the Shastra. Dharmang tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So, according to Shastra, this is wrong to kill the child in the womb. That is wrong because by the laws of nature that you have engaged in an activity which causes the child, to the embryo, to start forming in the womb. You have done what is tantamount to inviting a living being to take shelter in that womb. So now it is your duty to protect that child, which is another reason why there's so much dharma for grihastha's family life, the things they should do. Because grihastha life is centered, I mean, the specific feature which is there, which is not in the other three ashrams, is the physical union of man and woman. So this causes birth. So it is the duty of the man and the woman to protect that child, to protect, to maintain, to train. That is why divorce is also, there's one reason why divorce is not allowed. I'm trying to think what the word for divorce is. There is no word.
Right.
They made up some words. These are new words. There's no words in traditional Indian languages for divorce. The only traditional language of India in which there's a word for divorce is Urdu, because that's not based on Hindu culture, that's based on Muslim culture. Because who gives birth to the... they have no... It's not allowed that they should just leave that responsibility. So, what is morality, what is right, what is wrong, this is given in Shastra. And unless we refer to Shastra, then we invent a morality based on sense gratification. Just like in Christianity, they said that, well, in the Bible it said that God gave man dominion over the animals. Dominion means the right to rule over them. So they interpret, then we should kill them and eat them. This is an interpretation based on the desire for gross personal sense gratification. That means that man is given dominion over the animals, means he should protect them and look after them. But due to a perverted mentality, we think, oh, we should kill them and eat them. A couple go away, here's our child, please look after him. They give to their neighbors, please look after him. Yeah. And they come back and say, where is our child? He gave to look after us, and he's so young and soft flesh. No. We didn't have enough money to buy mutton, so... Yeah. We didn't have enough money for beef, so we had to. This may sound like a very gross example. It is, but it's an example that Prabhupada gave, that you're taking care of doesn't mean to kill and eat. So without understanding dharma, actually we can't even be moral.
Dharma is above ordinary morality, but without dharma, one cannot actually be moral anyway, because one will be on the manoratam, on the mental chariot. Without dharma, one cannot even have basic morality, because one will be on the plan, the mental plan. But dharma, that leads us above ordinary morality, and gradually brings us to the transcendental position. Again, we can get that example of the Grihastha Ashram. It's meant for more than simply living a moral life. If man and a woman indulge in sexual union outside of marriage, that is immoral. So within marriage, that is morally acceptable. But actually, the purpose of marriage is to regulate the human being to be more than simply moral. It is supposed that they should dharmo viruddha bhuteshu kamo smiharitashara. Man and wife are supposed to unite with the specific purpose of producing good children. Good means specifically those who will follow the principles of dharma and who will be devoted. Otherwise, unless the son is following dharma, this Chanakya Pandit has compared such a putra to mutra. They both come out of the same hole. But a putra who is neither a follower of the Vedic literature nor a devotee, then is simply would have been better if it was water. So these are very severe statements of Shastra. But they are statements of Shastra. You may think, well, what are we saying these things in front of women? Well, actually the Shastra is not supposed to be said to women. So some of the things may seem very gross, but the thing is that they're supposed to be taught to, that these things are taught to brahmacharis, who after they marry, they teach their wives, maybe not in such graphic terms. So anyway, the point is that dharma, that is more than ordinary morality. Without getting information from Bhagavan, which is given in Shastra, which is Shastra, we cannot understand what is right and what is wrong. What may seem to us to be right may be wrong and vice versa. Just like Arjuna, he thought, I should not fight, it is immoral to fight. But Krishna told him, no, for you in this situation, it's immoral not to fight. So exactly what is dharma and what is not dharma for any given person in any situation may be difficult to ascertain. Dharma is not monolithic. I don't know how you're going to explain. It means it's not one face. There are different dharma. What may be dharma for one person in one situation may be a dharma for someone else. For instance, for a man to approach his wife for producing children, that is dharmic. But for someone else to approach the same woman for the same purpose, that is adharma. Although sometimes it may be dharma, but it may be dharma. Just like Vyasadeva was sent to impregnate Amba Ambalika Ambika. So in that case, that was dharma. That's called Devarena Sutopati, but that is forbidden in Kali Yuga. So even for the same person, what may be dharmic in one situation may be adharmic in another. For a man to approach his wife, certain days in the month is dharmic and other days is adharmic. According to the rutu, the menstrual period. So many days before, so many days after. So there are various reasons for that. Because there are so many subtle influences within the universe. Subtle and gross. So, Kala Nirnaya, the consideration of time, is very important in Vedic culture. If all important activities, they have to be calculated astrologically, what is the best time to do. So generally it's given, these days, that is dharmic to approach your wife, these days not dharmic. Exactly, you can find the right time that will be very suitable for sutopati, producing a good son. So all these considerations, the time, the place, the situation, the persons involved, all these have to be considered in considering whether an activity is dharmic or adharmic. So it's not so easy to understand. Therefore, brahmanas are required in society who can give guidance. What is the best thing to do for you in this situation? But because it's so complex and because different brahmanas have got different, themselves are on different levels of understanding, even the brahmanas may give different advice. We find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there was a great devotee called Subhuti Rai. His story is narrated. So he was a big landowner, Zamindar. And there happened to be one young Muslim boy who was without parents, who was under him. So one of the many people who was not working under him. So he looked, he oversaw everything for him, like a son. He saw that he was brought up and everything. One time that boy did something very bad, so he beat him with a whip. Later, that boy, he got into a position of ministership of the Muslim king of Bengal. He killed him and he himself became the Nawab. So he became the king of Bengal. So one time, his wife happened to notice there are some marks on his back. Maybe one of his wives, probably had more than one. So she said, "What is this?" He was reluctant to say, but she insisted. So he told, "You see, when I was a young boy, I did something wrong, and Subhuti Rai, he beat me, and that mark is there too." He said, "Then you should kill him." "But I can't do that. He brought me up just like a father. I got punished, I deserve to be punished. I'm a rascal." But she insisted, and so in the end, he came up with some compromise solution. "I shall pour some water from my water pot on him." And they might think, "Well, that doesn't sound very bad. It's not like killing someone." But there was a very foolish idea extant in Hindu society at that time, that if some water from a Muslim's water pot was sprinkled on a Hindu, he would become Muslim. So that was considered a very bad thing to happen, because then you'd have to leave your family, your caste, everything, your position, everything would be finished. So he did it. The Nawab did it. He sprinkled water on Subhuti Rai. Then Subhuti Rai said, "Now what to do? Now I'm going to be rejected from Hindu society. I can't stay with my family, with my property, nothing." Yeah. So he asked some different Bhattacharyas what to do. Bhattacharya means those who are, they study and they come up with solutions for all these things. Someone may go to the Bhattacharya and say, "Well, I killed a spider. What should I do?" "Then you have to perform the Chandrayana Vrata. For 1 month, you only take as many bites, mouthfuls of food as according to the titi." So on, just like that, on Amavasya you'll take nothing, and on Dvitiya you can take 2 bites, on Tritiya you can take 3 bites, for killing a spider, very severe. And then someone else will go to him and say, "But your son also killed a spider." "Really? Let's have another look at the book." "Oh, I found, actually, you don't have to do the Chandrayana Vrata. There's another, you just do some simple thing and it will be clear." So anyways, Subhuti Rai approached the Bhattacharya and said, "Well, how can I get free from this kalanka, from this contamination?" And some said, "Well, that's not such a big thing. You can do something." But most of them recommended that the only way you can get free from this is by drinking hot ghee, boiling ghee. You drink so much boiling ghee and it will kill you, of course. "This is very good, and then in your next life again you can be born as a Hindu." So then he thought, what to do? They're saying different things. I'll ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Oh, you got water thrown on a water pot from a Muslim. You're very lucky. That's a good excuse. Now you can leave home and family and go and live in Vrindavan." Which is what he did. So he didn't know what to do, so he asked God himself. He didn't know what to do, so he asked God himself. So we should, if we want to get proper guidance, it's not sufficient to go to simply an astrologer or someone even who's learned in Shastra. We have to go to a guru who is as God, good as God. It means he knows what is the purpose of Shastra and knows how to instruct. In other words, it should be a devotee. Otherwise, you'll end up taking advice from people who know Shastra, but they don't know the purpose of Shastra. And you'll end up staying in the material world. So Dharma, the principles of Dharma should be followed, but with the understanding that real dharma means to satisfy Krishna.
And there's one verse given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Let's see if I can find it. I can't. Loka ki vaidhi ki chaiva. How does that happens to be here? It's good for people with no brains like myself. Well, it looks like they haven't quoted it. Loka ki vaidhi, they haven't quoted it. Anyway, there's a verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Hari seva anukula.
I'm not remembering. But anyway, it says that the devotees, they follow the rules of Shastra and the rules of morality, inasmuch as they are favorable to cultivating Krishna consciousness. The rules of dharma, they are, for devotees, they're subservient to the principle of surrender to Krishna. Anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya varjanam. These two principles dictate the behavior of a devotee. One should act in a manner that is favorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness and give up all things which are not favorable.
Hare Krishna. Is there any question?
Women shouldn't listen to Shastra. Can listen to the Puranas, Mahabharata. We can all listen. I also can't listen to Shastra. I'm also not going to. Sri Shudra Dvija Bandhunam Chaina Veda Gocharaha. It's Sri Shudra Dvija Bandhu. That means everyone in Kali Yuga, women, Shudras, and the fallen descendants of the higher caste. Actually, I don't even fit in any of those three categories. I'm just from lecher stock. So these three kinds, they're not suitable for the study of Shastra. So for such persons, the Puranas were, and Mahabharata, especially Mahabharata stated was, Sri Shudra Dvija Bandhunam Chayina Shuti Gochara Karma Shreyasti Mudhanam Shreya Evan Bhavadiha Iti Bharatam Akhyanam Kripayamunina Kritam. He compiled, Vyasadeva compiled the Mahabharata for persons with no brains in Kali Yuga.
And the Puranas,
of which the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not just another Purana. It's also, it is in its own category, it is non-different from the personality of Godhead. So everyone can listen to this. It directly brings us in contact with Krishna, which is the Param Dharma, which transcends, all bodily distinctions. But again, as Srimad Bhagavatam advises us, it's a good book to have, because I have no brain, I forget all the verses, that we should continue to follow the ordinary dharma as long as we're not fully on the transcendental platform. Well, that verse that's going to look up isn't here either. Quite a few important verses which are not here. But anyway, there's that verse is that in Bhagavatam, which I'm trying to remember, but because I have no brain, I can't. So it states that as long as one is not fully freed from material desires, one should continue to follow the Vedic directions of Varnashram. So again, I'll ask, is there any question?
He's asking, getting into Krishna consciousness or bhakti, as a result of karma, it's like something we are reviving in ourselves.
Karma cannot bring us to bhakti. Karma produces karma fall. Bhakti produces bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhaktistu bhagavad bhakta sangena parijayate. Bhakti comes from bhakti. It's specifically from association with devotees.
That verse, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati, kriyatam yadi katopi lapyate. Tatram lolyam api, tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam. Kotish, what is that? Koti janma sukritayana na labhyate.
That, Krishna consciousness, that is very rare to be achieved. It cannot be achieved even in many lifetimes of performing pious activities. The price to get Krishna bhakti, exactly the word is given, mulya. The only price is lolyam, or intense desire. However, the Vedic directions are so nice that by performing punya karma, that gives one even unknowingly the opportunity to perform bhakti unmukhi sukriti, or activities that are conducive, clandestinely or not indirectly, but unknown to us, they are conducive for developing bhakti. For instance, in Shastra it's recommended that to get punya by which you can enjoy yourself on the heavenly planet, you should plant trees on the road. This will give shade to travelers.
So someone may do so with the idea of doing punya and I will go to the heavenly planet. Nothing to do with bhakti. So anyway, he may do that and die and go to the heavenly planet. Of course, you've got to do a lot more than just planting a few trees to go to the heavenly planet. But that's one of the things that one should do.
Yeah.
So there he is on the heavenly planets drinking soma rasa and dancing with the apsaras. And pure devotee walks along the road and takes shade from the tree. So without it even being known to him, he gets some increment of some points, you could say, which lead him toward bhakti. That's why devotees have to move around in the world to give people the chance to come in contact with them. And that way they can become purified even without their knowledge. Huh? Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. What kind of moksha? Well, there are five kinds of moksha. Sarupya, Samipya, Sarshti, Salokya, and Kaivalya. Sarupya, Kaivalya. So, there are five kinds. Devotees, you see, just like in Ramanuja Sampradaya and Madhva Sampradaya, they follow the Varnashram duties with the idea of attaining mukti in Vaikuntha. So that is called Daivi Varnashram. That is following the Varnashram principles with the aim of attaining Vishnu Pad, Tarampad, the spiritual world. Asuri Varnashram aims for moksha with no reference to the personality of Godhead. Asuri Varnashram means simply the caste system, which is, there's no real idea of even moksha. It's just live in this world and exploit others. Whereas the Varnashram system is designed to curb that tendency for exploitation and rechannel it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught that Krishna Prem, that is the Param Purushartha, that is beyond Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. Jara Age Trina Tulya Chari Purushartha. He said, in comparison to Krishna Prem, is such that in comparison with it, this Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha, they are no more significant than a piece of grass. It is so exalted. Krishna Prem. So you might think, then why are we talking about Dharma instead of Krishna Prem? Because Krishna Prem also, it's not that you just take one jump and you're there. Most people have difficulty even following basic moral principles. And Dharma is about morality. Speaking about Dharma, we're speaking in a manner to raise people from above immorality and above morality to Dharma. Because unless one follows, although Krishna Bhakti is above Dharma, unless one follows basic dharmic principles, there's no question of bhakti. You can chant Hare Krishna, but if you're eating flesh and enjoying flesh in the form of other people's wives, then there's no question of bhakti. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spent practically at least half his energy combating this wrong idea that you can be a devotee means we don't have to follow any principles because we're above all that. So anything else? Next question.
I want to know, in Nigeria they have a rule, if a child is, if you got a child in an illegal way, the law says that you can kill the women just by throwing stones.
That's probably taken from Islam. Yeah, that's in Islam, that the woman and the man also may be stoned to death publicly for illicit sex. They were doing in Afghanistan up until recently.
You also want to know whether it is an avadharma in any way?
No, that's not it. There are different punishments given, but not that. It depends in different cases. In Manu, it describes the various punishments. Manu describes the various punishments for different degrees of illicit sex. It depends who you do what to and whether it's by force or with consent and so on. In many cases, the very severe punishment in Vedic society is to be expelled from society. To have your caste removed, called bahishkrit, you may have heard that term, means thrown out. Literally means that, to be put outside. So that means that you have to join Milet Chandal community who live outside the village and they perform all sinful activities. That means you lose the chance to perfect or to properly utilize your human form of life by following dharma. That's considered an extremely severe punishment. So Hare Krishna, we'll finish there.